Okay, I'm Suzanne, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater. And first of all, I want to thank the former convention chairs who helped select our wonderful speakers. And I want to thank them for their service, who helped us select the... And so a lot of people don't know how they get selected. People nominate people, and then there's a selection committee. So I want to thank all the hard work that went into this. And we try to be diverse geographically, and age-wise, too. So our first speaker is the youngest speaker of the convention. Her name is Juliana, and she's 30 years old, and she is our first speaker. So please, and she's from California, from India, so please give her a big hand.
Hi, everybody. Who's excited to be here? There isn't much excitement. I don't feel it. Who's excited to be here? Hey! Okay, well, as Susan said, my name is Juliana. I am a compulsive eater. And I have been working this wonderful program for 5 years and 5 months. Woo! I have completely lost. Not found. And if you lose it, you found it. You'll find it. So I don't want to find those pounds again. But I have lost a total of 60 pounds, of which 52 have been with the program. And I am very happy and blessed. My journey has not been the easiest because I do not like to go with the flow. I always like to fight it. And I found out about this program when I was 25 years old. My mom was actually the one that introduced me, but I was reluctant. I did not want to. I was like, why? How is it possible? Why do I want to be in a program where you can't eat this and you can't eat that, and then you have to talk about your emotions, and God, you know, all those emotions that are bottled up should just be better bottled up. And I was not going with it. It took me 11 months of her program for me to finally jump in and take the leap and start my program. But it was the most wonderful thing that I have ever done. And I have never been more thankful for being a compulsive eater because now that I realize I'm a compulsive eater, I realized that there's an alternative and a better way of living. And for that, I am thankful for. I have always struggled with weight. Ever since I was in elementary school, I just gained weight. And I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. And I didn't know what it meant to deal with my emotions. So I just kind of fed all of my emotions with food. And that's how I dealt with it. As I grew older, the more things started to happen, because I'm going to be very honest, being an adult is not better than being a kid. But when you have kid problems and you eat kid things, when you're an adult and you have more money, you have more problems, you have more ability to eat all these things that you didn't know were damaging you. So as I grew older, I fought my way to be able to not deal with the situations, but just live them by, and live them with food, because that was my way of dealing with everything. Eventually, when I got to a point where I couldn't stand being overweight anymore, I started dieting, and the dieting process was not the easiest for me, because I would diet for 3 days at a time, and then I would compensate my body for the struggles I put it through by dieting, with rewarding it with the three days worth of food that I didn't eat in 1 day. And that caused me to gain even more weight. I managed to make my weight up to 200 pounds, a size 16, and that was when I was in high school, beginning of college. And I was bullied. Nobody really likes the chubby girl, but I dealt with it by eating, which was not the best thing. Eventually, I put myself in a very strict diet, and I was able to lose about 15 pounds, and I felt great about it. I was happy and made makeover and buying clothes for women, because I was buying clothes for men instead of women, because those were just more comfortable for me. Once I was able to diet and lose the 15 pounds, I started wearing women's clothes. I started doing what women are supposed to do with the makeup and the hair, and I felt good. I met my now husband, because I've been married and abstinent, so I'm very thankful for that. I met my husband, and we had all of our possibilities to go eat wherever we could. And he himself is also a compulsive eater, but he doesn't realize it or recognizes it just yet. But we'll get to it. It's a process. When I started dating him, we started going to different restaurants, and that process made it so that I gained the 15 pounds and a little bit more. In the process, I was disappointed, very loved by him, and he was like, it's okay, I love you the way you are, very supportive boyfriend, but I didn't love myself the way I was. I didn't accept myself the way I was, and I wanted to do something different, but I didn't know what. So that's when I came to realize about this wonderful 12-step program. And I fought it all the way, and you know, you couldn't, I started this program in February, but I started attending the meetings in October. And of course, you couldn't start right before Halloween, and then you can't start in November because it's Thanksgiving, or December because Christmas and New Year's, and there was always an excuse about not starting the program. And one day, I was just at a meeting because I got the opportunity to go to a face-to-face meeting, and I was in my meeting, and I just turned around to the person that was next to me, and then I asked her, do you want to be my sponsor? And she's like, yeah, this is the first time that I'm sponsoring, but I'll do it. So I started my journey, and it was the best decision I've ever made. First month, I lost 15 pounds, and I was so happy and thankful for it. And working the program physically was a relief, because I was seeing my body change. And you know, me as a compulsive eater, I want changes like this. It has to happen now. It should have happened yesterday. But I'm not willing to work it that way. I just want the miracle results. While working my program, I came to realize all of the emotional baggage that I was carrying and how much that affected me and how much those emotions took me to eating. So while working my program with my sponsor, I've managed to deal with my emotions. I've managed to work out every situation, because life is never going to be perfect, but how I deal with it and what my response is the best way of dealing with the situation. Now I have the tools that allow me to keep my abstinence, to keep my peace of mind, and to realize that I don't have to find comfort in food is the best blessing ever. I have had my journey for 5 years and 5 months, of which I have been able to travel. I have traveled to various countries, and I've managed to keep my abstinence. I was able to get married. Yes, I'm very happy, because you know, when I started the program, I was so scared. I was like, I'm never gonna be able to do anything. I mean, what is this weighing food and measuring and doing all of these restrictive things? And I was afraid. I was afraid to go to the restaurants and weigh everything. And I was afraid to ask for alternative options. And I was just scared. And that fear and that kept me, froze me. But when I overcame it and I realized I have to do it for me, then that's when things started to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I've traveled with my abstinence. I got married. My wedding was in abstinence. I've dealt with family members, because family members are not the easiest to deal with when it comes to, why don't you eat this? It's only a little bit. It's not going to hurt you. You're not going to die. And of course, you come to realize, I'm doing it for me, not for you. I respect your way of living, but you sure as hell have to respect mine.
Amen.
Because mine is important to me. I am very blessed to have found this program. The sponsors, my support group, everybody that has helped me every step of the way, and the people that I have helped. Because helping others is just as important as getting help. Being a supportive individual to my other co-members is the best thing, knowing that you can be that life support when they feel like they're down, is what gives you the ability to keep your abstinence, to be as a good example. And if you're not a good example, you know what? It happens. If you fall down, you're not gonna lose everything. You're gonna get up and you're gonna keep going and you're gonna keep working at it one day at a time. And if one day is too much, then half a day, 1 hour, 10 minutes. I'm not gonna eat for this 5 minutes, just 5 minutes away from the food. I'm not gonna deal with this emotion by eating. I'm gonna deal with it the way I'm supposed to deal with it. I'm going to call my sponsor. I'm gonna use my tools to be able to keep my abstinence and work it. And I am blessed, happy, walking with this journey and living, enjoying the joy of living as a CA HAL member.
Oh, really?
My time's up.
Hell of a timer.
Woo! Okay, what a way to end a share, right? Woohoo! Our next speaker is Barbara from Atlanta. Give it up for Barbara.
Thank you so very much, Suzanne, for asking me to be a part of this event today, and I'm just grateful to be here. Juliana, thank you so much for what you shared. Today, I am grateful that I have 4 years and 29 days, and, I forgot, 2 months, so that goes in between, of recommitted abstinence. And I just want to start a little bit talking about where I was several decades ago. I grew up in, I'm going to say it, it's the best borough in New York City. It's not the boogie down Bronx, it's Brooklyn. I'm the other Barbara from Brooklyn, and I love Brooklyn, but I don't longer live in Brooklyn. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. So I tell people that I'm a papal. I'm a peach and an apple. So I have Southern hospitality, but I still have a certain edge about me as a New Yorker. But I'm just grateful. But my story does begin in Brooklyn, New York. I was born in 1962 in the month of April, which is a fire sign, so you can only imagine I'm actually fire coming and going based on my charts. So there were some things about my birth that my mother told me that were traumatic. And recently I've been thinking maybe that trauma is also part of this condition that I would like to say for many years there was this soul, this hole in my soul, there was a wound, and it was upon birth. But of course, I didn't know until I came into these rooms, and we have those wonderful questions, the inventory questions that help us to go deeper and deeper and deeper. And thank God for those people. I mean, if we can just give them applause, the people who sit down and do the literature and the questions. Okay, so we have no wills to invent in this place called recovery. We have people who do that kind of service, and for that I'm grateful. So I grew up in Brooklyn, and for about, I would say, a good 7.5 or 8 years of my life, I lived what I felt was a very normal life, although I did not grow up in a two-parent household. I did grow up with a mother who was a parent. She wasn't just, she was a mother, she was a parent. She provided for me and my brother to the best of her ability. She worked 6 days a week, but we had to, so with that, we had to learn how to take care of ourselves in a lot of ways, but we also had other people that care for us immensely. Unfortunately, though, at the very young age of 8, my mother became chronically ill. She could no longer work, and most of her days were trying to breathe. Although she never smoked a day in her life, she had emphysema. And so if you can imagine, here I am, 8 years old. My life has really changed in a traumatic way. I now believe that I probably had a nervous breakdown at 8 years old. I had to care for my mother. There were weeks when my mother was in the hospital, and she did pass away the day after Christmas in 1976. And so for many years, I thought I was to blame for that. I did not get to see her on Christmas Day, 1976. But the good news is that I believe that when my mother made her transition, she must have prayed for me and my brother. There were things that she had already planted seeds for me. The first time I can remember her bringing a bank book to me at 7 and saying, "This is for your college education." So she knew something that I didn't know, and that she wanted me to go away to leave New York. So because I was determined and because I wanted to make sure I was committed to what was her dream, which was to finish school, I felt like I needed to stay on track. And part of me staying on track is being very demanding of myself, but I also never felt like I was good enough. I was never smart enough. I was never cute enough. And I certainly did not have the body image of my very best friend, Debbie, who was a size 1. So when we went shopping, preteen shopping in New York, you know, I was at one end and she was at the other. Now keep in mind, I was not an obese child, but I had a body image issue, because how I perceived myself was someone who was very fat. Well, what I was curvaceous. And as a preteen, I probably looked very womanly. But I wore baggy clothes because I wanted to cover up the curves. Again, I always compared myself to other people. I didn't like who I was. And as I said, because my mother was very sick, there were things that happened during her illness that I did to myself. I pulled all of my hair out. I had to wear a wig in elementary school. So all of these images of myself were not very good. Even though I was, you know, I did well in school, I got a scholarship to go to college, I still didn't think I was enough. I was always worrying about what other people thought of me. Well, recently what came up is that most people are thinking about themselves, so Barbara, they're not really thinking about you. Okay, you know, you're not all that in a bag of chips that people just run around thinking about you all the time. So, and those to me are those divine, inspirational, what I call wisdom words from my higher power, God. Because now that's where I like to sit and connect. It's like, okay, God, what's next? What really should I be thinking about today? What should I be doing to show up, to show others that, you know, you are all that in a bag of chips, that you are the master producer, the creator, the crafter, the divine presence, that for today, if I wasn't in these rooms, I don't know where I really would be. Because before I came back, because that's what I wanted to share, yeah, 1996, a friend who saw me growing obesely, she saw me struggling. She invited me to the rooms of O.A. Howe. I went to my first meeting. I said, no, I'm not like these people. I don't eat compulsively. I just eat one meal a day. But it's about how much I was eating at that one meal a day. But then I found out, too, that I'm a grazer and I'm a binger. And I didn't find that out until I came into these rooms, because most of my eating was so unconscious. Like, vagueness is for real. But once we are, in fact, lifted from that vagueness, we can then see, you know, what we were eating, Oh, when I was eating. Oh, yeah, I was at Sam's Club. They were giving out food. Okay, that's where I was. That's how some of this weight came on. Oh, yeah, the other part of my story is that I got abstinence because, one, I wanted to lose some weight, but also I got abstinent in a business that, believe it or not, food was around me 24/7. So for 7 years, I was a professional caterer. This is the miracle of this program. My first sponsor, I said, so tell me now how I'm supposed to do this. Like, I need to taste the food because it's got to be good. She's like, well, you have to trust your staff. So there's that word called trust, willingness, openness, honesty. I was honest enough to say to her, look, I don't know if I can, like, trust the staff, but I'm willing just for today to do that. And so my willingness grew. I believe that my staff knew our expectations and the value of good food, because I know the value of good food. Do you know the value of good food? Yes. So I knew the value of good food, and taste was important, and I wanted to keep doing a good business. But I got abstinent running a catering company for 7 years. I just need to take a pause. And I lost 75 pounds. So I wasn't expecting no applause. I lost 75 pounds. In 1997, I found out that I was going to be a mother. I was pregnant with my first and only child, who is now 21 next month. I was a size 4. I was still going to meetings. But oh my goodness, I didn't do that 4-step inventory. I didn't. So I stayed abstinent without really going deeper and deeper and finding out what it is that I really need to find out, which is that, you know, I also have a spiritual and emotional unwellness. There's still more work that I need to do. Being a single parent, that's what I was. I was a single parent. I then went into control mode again. I took my will back. I eventually stopped going to meetings. I said out loud to God, no one will make me weigh and measure my food again. It's a wrap. I'm done. And so 8 years later, I was nearly 100 pounds increase, all that weight. And now, not only physical weight, but more emotional weight, more demands I'm making on myself because, oh yeah, by the way, I'm a perfectionist. I don't know, anybody relate to that situation? So I'm a perfectionist, I'm a control freak, I'm an Aries. I mean, it's just a hot mess. And then I have this precious gift that, it, to me, although I love him dearly, he's still not meeting all my wants and needs and demands, because that's what it is, you know. It's about, you have to meet my wants and my needs and my demands. But God has given me this precious gift. But he was also my precious lesson. Because I'm sure we all have trigger foods, trigger people, trigger situations. My son was my trigger. Because I never, ever felt good enough. I didn't even feel like I was going to be a good mom. But I had all these demands that I placed on him and I placed on myself. But the good news is that the joy of living today is that, you know what, I like myself. I love myself a whole lot better. And as a result of being able, loving, kind, and compassionate to Barbara, the little girl that I did not like, because I was never good enough, smart enough, cute enough, flirtatious, and I just was not enough. How ungrateful. But today I have so much gratitude that God decided that I could be here in this moment, that I could have recovery, that I could be restored, that I could love my son unconditionally as long as I put God in the middle. Because as human beings, I don't think we can, in fact, love unconditionally because we still have expectations. So today, I love my son unconditionally. There are other people that trigger me that I'm praying for still because it says pray for your enemies. Now, your enemies could be the people you lie in right next to. Because usually those are the people that hit us the hardest. It's not the folks that are on, you know, I live in Atlanta, 285. I'm not going home with them. You know, it's sometimes those people at work that we have seen, and I have seen some certain people for 18 years, and I'm praying for them because today I can't take them home and have them in my head. Not in a negative way, but I can have them in my head in a loving way, in a compassionate way, and, you know, and ask, as it says in our wonderful AA book, to pray for those who are still sick. And I'm still sick, so I need your prayers. I am still sick because I'm still living, and as long as I'm living, what I mean by that is that there's so much more for me to do and to be well. This week, these past 2 weeks have been really, really hard for me. I didn't know if I was going to show up to this event. Some things happened at work. Some things happened in my love life. But the good news is that I'm aware of that today, and I'm not eating over that today. I say the third step prayer throughout the day. God, I offer myself to thee to do with me as I will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that the difficulties, the victories, and I'm getting mixed up, but I say it all the time, but at the end of the day, we all have difficulties, but we also have victories. We all have courage when we are in fear, because it's a frightening thing to, as she said earlier, Juliana, to have to admit that I am in fact powerless. But I realize today that I am powerless over everything and most everybody because I can't control anything and anybody. But I can make a choice today to think differently about myself, to think differently about other people. And today I do have joy in living a better life. I learned how to garden as a result of recovery. Thank you. You know, the beautiful thing about seeds is that you plant them in the soil. You cover them up, you give them love, you give them water where God brings down the rain and the sunshine. That's just like we are. We were covered up, and now we're growing up, and we're sprouting, and we're blooming, and we're living probably, I would say, I am living the most wonderful time in my life. I just want to say one last thing. It's about preparation. I take yoga. Now, a year ago, I could not take yoga because I stood up one day from my bedside, and I could not walk hardly. Like, I have curvature of the spine. So here it is, you know, fast forward. I'm taking now hot yoga, 115 degrees. So my yoga instructor says, you cannot fight the heat. So somewhere in the big book it says, we cease fighting. I'm like, I get that. You can't fight the heat, but you can get prepared for it. So what we do every day in CEA How, as we are compulsive eaters in Anonymous How, is we can't fight the food. We can't fight the people. We can't fight the life situations, but we can be prepared. And that's what we do. We take the instructions, and we fight for our lives so that we can, in fact, live the best life that God has ever, 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 ever wanted for each of us. No matter how young, no matter how old, no matter what your gender, God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And to be joyful doesn't mean that I'm walking around with a big fat smile on my face every day. What it means is that I am well with myself and I am well with my soul. And today, no matter what, I am well with my soul. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Give it up for Barbara. All right. Our next speaker is Francesca from Los Angeles.
Everybody, how you doing tonight? Good. So I'm Francesca. I'm a compulsive eater. And just to qualify a little bit here, this morning when I got up, I was trying to figure out what to wear. And I tried on everything in my closet, okay? And this makes me look fat. This makes me this, you know. I wanted look skinny, but I don't want to show too much skin, you know. So who thinks about themselves that much when getting dressed? 2 hours, okay? 2 hours. So that's some, you know, I have some recovery, but I haven't recovered in that area yet. When I first sat down, I've been listening to the Mueller report, and I thought, oh, this feels like a Senate hearing, you know? Anyways, into my story. So I have 21 months of abstinence, and I've lost 60 pounds in the HOW program. And I came to HOW for the first time in my 20s, and I had 20 pounds to lose. And then I went out, and I came back in my 30s, and I had 40 pounds to lose. And I went out, and I came back in my 50s, and I had 80 pounds to lose, you know? So it's a progressive disease. When I got here the first time, it really was just a diet for me. I lost my weight, and I left. But because my disease progressed so much that it took that 80 pounds for me to get the willingness to do what I needed to do to recover. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My mom was an alcoholic. My dad was a compulsive eater. And we have 8 kids in our house. And I don't know if it's which came first, the chicken or the egg, whether I just felt like I didn't get enough because I was a compulsive eater, or if I didn't get enough and that made me a compulsive eater, I don't know. But I also sort of felt like I had to rely on myself, because I felt like there was so much chaos, you know. And the only time in our family where it wasn't chaotic was dinner time, when we would sit at the table. Everything had to go from right to left. You had to say please and thank you. There had to be certain foods on the table. It was very regimented. But the rest of the time, it was like, so I guess food for me was a safe place. From the very beginning, I had a really different relationship with food. I would go to other kids' houses and, you know, like eat everything. And, you know, and there were times when I know I wasn't asked back because of the way I ate, you know. The people would have a little dish of something on the thing, and I'm like, well, if they don't want me to eat it, why did they put that dish out there? I mean, made sense to me. So, and I also was a kid who would go in the cloakroom at lunch and steal the good stuff out of your lunch. Liar, cheat, and a thief, right? And so that's kind of the beginning. What took the joy out of my life was this disease. Because eventually what happened is I had to give up everything that I enjoyed in my life because of my disease. I ended up, you know, watching, you know, binge watching like Netflix, and with a bag of something, you know, home alone in the bedroom in the dark, you know, and that was, you know, I wouldn't answer calls, I wouldn't pay my, I was slow at paying my bills, I'll say. And so, you know, eventually I met someone, I had been going to HOW, you know, like the last time I was going to HOW for 6 years and couldn't get abstinent. But I met someone who sat down with me and took me through the big book, and really transformed my life. She showed me that in the book, it talks about how the book is a textbook, and it shows us precisely what we have to do to recover. And that's what the book is about. And then I read about the part where it says, when you eat the amount, you don't have any control over the amount you take, you're probably a compulsive eater, you know? And she asked me to go through my life and look for examples of powerlessness and unmanageability, write them out, you know, and then find a place in the book to match it to. And what that gave me was all the evidence that I needed to prove to myself that I was a compulsive eater. And so we started going through the steps. In step two, she asked me to write my concept of a higher power. And so I have been a person who believed in God but didn't rely on God. And because I thought it was up to me, you know. And I also thought asking for help, getting help, was a weak thing. So the thing that was the most touching in my life at that moment was my cat. And so, like, when my cat would come up to greet me, I'd be like, hi, I love you, even if he just bit me, you know. And so that was, like, my first inkling of what I wanted my higher power to be, somebody who loved me the way I love my cat. And then I also threw in a little MacGyver and Sean Connery, because I wanted, you know, like a handsome gentleman who could be fatherly, also cute, you know, could solve any problem. So, and I know that's kind of a childish place to start, but we can start anywhere, right? So then she asked me to start getting on my knees every day and starting a conversation with that God. And so the first time It was like I didn't really know what I was doing, but and it kind of felt rote because I'm like, I'm just doing this because I was directed to do this. And then we moved into step three where, because I had all that evidence of my insanity, I'll give you one example of my insanity. I was out of town. I stopped at a confection store that they don't have near where I live, and there's a favorite thing I like there, and I got like six of them. And I said, I'm gonna eat one now, and I'm gonna put the rest in the freezer. And before I even got within like 5 or 6 miles, you know, I'd eaten them all. And then I decided a really smart thing to do would be pull over on the freeway and throw it up, because I didn't want all those calories. So, you know, that's just an example of the insanity of my compulsive eating. Now, I wouldn't really say I was a bulimic, but, you know, there was that one insane time. So that's just an example of the kind of examples that I had to show my insanity. So I had enough evidence to be willing to make the decision to continue with the work. Step three is make a decision, right? So I started on the inventory. And what happened in the inventory was pretty much a party for the first couple of columns, which were like, you know, who they did and what they did to me. But then after that, it was I had to get into the part about what was my part. And what I learned with the patterns about myself, that I was living in a constant state of fear. And that fear was driving my character defects and causing me to act out in all these ways. And what happened for me was I began to get a lot of compassion for other people, because I could see that other people were living that same way. And so it's kind of an icky place to be right there in your fourth step. But my sponsor explained to me that this is who you were. This is not who you are anymore. This is who you were. But we have to get down to causes and conditions. What are the things that cause us to eat? Because I think that was the reason that I kept slipping all the time, was that things would build up. I didn't have the tools that I needed, and then I would need relief. And sooner or later, I mean, I didn't have a choice because I didn't have a God, you know? So I continued on, and in step six, I learned all about character defects and the opposites. And my sponsor asked me to write down what would it look like to do that differently. I had no idea. I had to get on the internet and look around, you know? what does it look like to stop gossiping? Like, oh, keep your mouth closed, you know, change the subject, go to another room, right? But so after, so step seven was six and seven are learning about the character defects and becoming willing to do something different and being willing to ask God to help me. So by this time, I'm doing the third step prayer in the morning and the seventh step prayer in the morning and asking, as those character defects come up, to be removed from them, inserting them into my seventh step prayer. And then I continued on to the amends. So after I finished step five, that's in the book, it talks about the arch that we're building to walk through a free man. So up until step five, that's kind of like the old garbage, right? But starting with step six and seven, that's where I start to change. So the fourth step is all about a internal house cleaning out all the things that block us from God. And then, so then I got on to step nine where I had to do the amends. And the amends for me were really life-changing. I was asked to do some direct amends and to write some letters and also to do some living amends. And when I wrote the letters to my family members, she asked me first to write what were the things that they gave me in my life. And so I wrote all those things out, and then the second paragraph I was asked to write what my part was, you know, in our relationship I was, and name my character defects. I couldn't have made any amends if I hadn't done that work to find out what those character defects were, because I wouldn't know what I was making an amend for. So I went to the graveside and I did those amends. I had three people in my family I had to do those amends with, and what changed for me was the whole way I thought about those relationships, because my resentment had really prevented me from accepting any of the gifts that people were trying to give me. I was like blocked away from it. And so now that resentment is completely resolved, you know. That was really amazing for me. Then in step 10, I was asked to, on a daily basis, examine my behavior at the end of the day. And I do that religiously. I go to page 86, the questions there. I ask myself those questions and I write it out. And I have a 10-step buddy that I call and we discuss it every day. What that allows me to do is to keep my attention focused on myself. And that has been the biggest tool of, well, it's two big several big tools of growth. That's one of the biggest tools of growth that I have, that I'm constantly looking at myself. It even says something in the book like, a life without self-examination. I don't know, I can't remember. But it's really good. It's allowed me to live my day in 24 hours. So I'm not, stuff is not building up like it used to. You know, if I have to make an apology, I make it right away. And I'm pretty much can just put my head down on the pillow and go to sleep. And in the morning I wake up and it's another day. And, you know, with the weight loss, you know, I was able to resume a lot of the things that I enjoy doing, yoga and all kinds of sports and, you know, like getting up off the floor, you know, things, little things, tying your shoes. That has been an amazing, also the tools that I learned of how to examine myself in the fourth step, those tools I'll use for the rest of my life, you know. I have no excuse for bad behavior anymore because I know better. You know, I know what I do, I know what I'm supposed to do, and I know I have God to go to, you know. So then, of course, there's the meditation, which after my prayers in the morning, it says that we reflect for a few minutes. I'm waiting to see if there's something that God wants me to do. I'm asking for inspiration. And then I do it again at night. But then I also, at times, have done other things like yoga, and I've gone to some group meditation, which I found that it really improved my ability to get into a individual meditation. And then, of course, service and working with others. You know, it says in the book it's the bright spot of our lives, and it is, to watch people recover, to watch them lose weight, to see the life, you know, in their eyes come back, to look, you know, to feel that love and those, you know, that we make friends here that we... that are going to, you know, that are so close because we have that common bond, we have that common cement. You know, it's the disaster and the recovery. The two of those things make a cement that makes us just bonded, and it's just an amazing gift. On the way over here, I was thinking about what a difference abstinence makes. Because remember, I mean, it made me kind of teary, from being in my room watching Netflix to have enough recovery to have somebody ask me to be a speaker. That's like, it's hard. I mean, it's a miracle. So I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's thank Francesca. Let's give it up for Francesca. Okay, our next speaker is Ruth from Utah. Let's give it up for Ruth. Ruth E.
Thank you, Suzanne, and thanks, everyone. And I've really enjoyed these shares. And I want y'all to know that I prayed to my higher power that something would happen, that I'd get out of this. And then when the alarm went off, I'm like, thank you, God. But false alarm. No, I'm really thankful for this opportunity to speak today. And I love listening to shares. Love the love that's in this room. Qualify, I'm Ruth, last initial E, you can call me Ruthie, you can call me Ruth, whatever, my grandkids say roof, roof. You can. But I'm just grateful to be a part of this program. I came to see how April 28th, 2011, and at that time my highest weight was over 306 pounds because I wouldn't weigh myself after that, and I know I got a lot larger. But the first time I was led to a CEHA meeting, I had tried everything. You know how it is. From the time I was a little kid, I really liked food. And I had a nice family, nice mom and dad. And I was the second of five. I had an older sister and there's three younger brothers. And I was actually born in a car on the way to Las Vegas because my mother waited too long. But poor woman. But I think about how... Even when I was a young kid, I knew something was different about me. I wasn't really fat, but I honestly, I remember a Thanksgiving when I was at my grandma's house and I'd eaten so much food. I went in on her bed to take a nap and then I got sick. And oh, grandma was mad. Oh boy, you just don't do that ever again. And another time, sixth grade, we were having safety patrol and they had these little belts, the one around here and up over your shoulder. Well, mine was up like this, like fat man in a little suit because it was too small, but all the other kids fit, and I thought, what's wrong with mine? So I could tell a few things were going on, and And, you know, I didn't really think about food all that much, and we didn't have a lot of food. My dad was a school teacher. We didn't have a lot of money, but absolutely, by the time I was in high school, I knew I was a compulsive eater. And I was in the drill team, and lots of exercise and everything. I kept my weight down, and I would starve a lot. But I really blossomed when I went to college, and that's when I gained not the freshman 20, but the freshman 35. And by the time I went home at Christmas, everybody's looking at me like, what in the world happened? And I was a little bit worried about that. And then I met my husband-to-be, and I was in a grocery store shopping for a diet, you know. I had getting all this food for this next diet. And we talked a while, and I'd known him before, but we met in this grocery store, and he says, well, come with me to this contraband place. And I thought, why not? I'm not starting this diet till Monday. It's okay. And so I went with him. That was our first date. The poor man should have known what he was in for, but he didn't because I acted normal as I could. But we got married, and we ended up having 5 children in 8 years, and that was a real learning experience, especially for my children. And I had tried, by the time I was late 20s, I'd tried just about every diet there was. You know what it's like. You try them all too. And you know, TOPS and commercial weight loss programs. I even went to a commercial weight loss program when I was 5 months pregnant with my first child because I gained 50 pounds. I'm like, I can't do this. And in those days, they let you go when you're pregnant. And I lost the 50 pounds and had my poor little baby that was 22 inches long and 6 pounds, 12 ounces. He looked like a little buzzard. But I starved to death the last 4 months. But anyway, with every baby, I would gain 40, 50, 60 pounds. And after every baby, I'd take it off. And with the last baby, I had found out about a place called How, because I'd been to our sister program, and I loved it. It was awesome, really nice people there. But I pretty much did the first step and the 12th step. You know, I knew I was a compulsive eater, and I told everybody about it. So no steps in between, just, you know. And so it was fun for a little while, but I found out about this How, and I thought, I got to go find out about this. And so that was the meeting that I learned how strict it was. And we probably got it all wrong in Utah because it was crazy, let me tell you. I went one time, and I had just become pregnant, and I was so sick, and I went and said, and you had to tell everybody if you had a slip. So I said, well, I had a slip this week. I had this. And they're like, thank you for your honesty. You must now leave the room. I'm like, what? I can't get kicked out of How? But anyway, I did get kicked out of How. And so I really had kind of not a real good feeling for See How. And then the years went by, and there was a lady that I knew in my neighborhood who had lost 90 pounds, a little tiny thing. And I started going to a 12-step program our church was offering, and this lady was there, and I noticed that she always was so happy, and she stayed so thin. And one day I went up to her. I said, how did you lose 90 pounds, and how have you kept it off? Because I could lose weight. Sometimes we can all lose weight. I just can't keep it off for more than 4 minutes. And she said, well, come and go to this meeting, you know, which was such a smart thing to say, because when attraction, not promotion, there have been times when I've really botched that up. You know, people ask me things like, oh, you got to try it. It's so awesome. This. And sometimes I hear people lead with, ugh, this is the hardest program. You can't eat sugar. You can't eat flour. You got to weigh and measure your food. You got to answer questions. I don't lead with that stuff. I lead with the joy of living because see how it completely changed my life. And from that first meeting, I went in, and I was, like I say, over 306 pounds. And I at the point, you talk about the joy of living, I was having the drudgery of living. I was miserable, and I was controlling and resentful and argumentative. And my husband just tried with all his might to try to have a happy home. And our kids never knew what kind of mom they were going to have. You know, if I was on a good plan, then I was all happy. But if I was binging, look out. You know, don't get in the same room with mom. She's going to be screaming. And I was, and it was really hard on them. They paid a real price for my disease. But when I got to see how I found some hope, That was the most important thing. I found hope. They were, most of them at a normal size, and I was like, what is this, you know? Where's the scale? Where do I weigh in? And then when I got a sponsor and I got the food plan, I said, well, where are the free foods? Because, you know, you got to have free foods, right? What kind of diet is this? And they're like, just give it a try. And I went home, and my husband said, you don't have to do this. If it's too hard, I love you just the way you are. It's okay. Just don't worry about it. You know, this was from a man that I had wired my jaw shut to lose weight. I had done so many expensive, crazy things that he was really relieved that, A, this didn't cost $1,000, and B, I hadn't wired my jaw shut. But he said, you know, it's totally up to you. And I thought, okay, I'll give it 30 days. And you know how they say one is one too many and one more is never enough? I learned in that first 30 days what a portion was. You know, it's not three bowls. It's a half cup. It was just incredible to me. I was a real quantity eater. And for a while, I struggled with the concept of, well, I'm sugar and flour free, but who cares if I eat too many of those vegetables there or something. No, I really had to get strict with the weighing and measuring. That's what got the freedom for me. And anyway, the first month, I lost 22 pounds. And we were all in shock. We're like, what? So I said, okay, I'll try it again. I'll take another 30 days. And I told somebody last night that that's what I've been doing for the last 8+ years. I've been taking another 30 days. And I love See How. Thank you. Oh, you guys are the best. I wanted to give a big shout out before I started. First of all, to my higher power, because I really didn't know what I would say, and I wanted to say something that might help somebody in your journey. I wanted you to know you can make this miracle happen for you if you keep coming back and you believe and you get a sponsor and you work those steps and you keep those tools going. This miracle is here for you. 5 minutes? Thank you. Thanks so much for your service. This miracle is here for all of us. It's not for just a select few. It's not for those people who know how to deprive themselves and then binge or whatever. All the tricks we tried before, all the dieting stuff, it never worked. This is so much better. My higher power has given me such a freedom. My husband and I travel a lot. We have a really good time. We go on cruises and we go on all these fun vacations. I've stayed abstinent on a cruise. I've stayed abstinent in the hospital. I've stayed abstinent, you know, with my 19 grandkids running around like maniacs. You can stay abstinent in any condition if we are willing and if we stay in fit spiritual condition, which I'm not always in fit spiritual condition. Sometimes I'm ready to pull my hair out. We all are. But honestly, I realized that I had always been giving up everything for one thing, my disease. And now I've learned I can give up one thing for everything. And thank you. It just, you know, it's just a total different lifestyle. From when I was a kid, I memorized the eye chart that have a nurse come to the school and give all the kids school. I didn't want to wear glasses, so I memorized that chart. And when it was my turn, I'd just read it off. Well, when I got to be 16 years old, they got a new chart. I'm like, what? And so I had to have glasses, and I was just mortified. But I put those glasses on, and I was like, whoa, there are birds in the sky. There's leaves on the trees. It was just a sudden, I could see things clearly, and I had been fighting it my whole life. And that's how it is for me with See How. I feel like I can finally see things clearly, that my higher powers opened up such an amazing joy of living for me that I never experienced before. And I always believed in God. I have always believed in God. I did not think he believed in me. I thought he was a very demanding, grumpy, mean God that I could never be good enough for. But boy, I'd sure die trying. And See How helped me find a new concept of a loving, kind Heavenly Father that has my back and that is always going to be there, you know, praying for my success right along with me. And that's been the biggest difference. I'm so grateful that I came to See How and learned what my higher power is really like. And I wanted to say, too, one thing about how one of the things that happened to me when I was really my largest weight was I was on a plane, and the seatbelt wouldn't buckle. And I'm like I need an extension. And the flight attendant was really nice. He said, okay, I'll get you one. She goes up. They are out of seatbelt extensions. I don't know if there's a shortage at the store or whatever, but there are no seatbelt extensions on the plane. And she says, well, you can't take off without your... I said, can we just pretend it's hooking? She said, no. So they had to go hunt for a seatbelt extension for me, and the plane was delayed, and everybody's like, what's going on? And I'm just sitting there going, oh, my gosh. They finally found the seatbelt extension, brought it on the plane. I snapped it in, and everybody knew that I was the one that we had all waited for. And this time when I hopped on the plane in Salt Lake City, I got on, I put on my seatbelt. There was about, I don't know, 15 inches sticking out. And I'm thinking, that's a miracle. That, thank you, God, is a miracle to me. So I just want you to know, this is just a much happier. There was a friend of mine who hadn't seen me. You know, people thought my husband was going out with another woman. And she hadn't seen me for a long time. And we're at some wedding reception, and she goes, oh, Ruth, what happened to you? I'm like, oh, I lost some weight. And she's like, oh, my gosh. And she looked at my husband, and she said, you finally have a trophy wife. I thought, what? And my husband, I love this man, he said, I've always had a trophy wife. So shout out to all our husbands and our wives and our partners, those who support us, our family members. Sometimes family members make it hard. Sometimes they make it easy. But with our higher power side, we can make it through anything. And I'm just grateful that I could be here today with all of you. And thank you.